Karen Treatment Center supports WHYY. Is someone you care about struggling, losing interest in activities they loved? Changes like these can be a sign of drug and alcohol abuse. As a behavioral health care and addiction treatment center, Karen helps families understand when professional help is warranted, offering therapies that restore wellness in body, mind, and spirit. A confidential assessment is available at 855-894-4325 or at karen.org. That's CARON.org.
Those intending to be in Philadelphia during the last weekend of September are getting a better sense of how to make their way during the papal visit. I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Authorities on both sides of the Delaware River revealed new security and transportation details. Let's start in the Garden State with WHYY's Joe Hernandez. Joe, very telling. We've learned from New Jersey authorities that if you're not heading to Philadelphia, you should stay at least 50 miles away to avoid traffic jams. They're really calling for a crowd.
That's right, Dave. They're saying if you want to get into Philadelphia, be prepared to wait, be prepared to walk. 50 miles is what they said to stay away. But there are going to be ways that you can get into the city and get near the city to be able to walk in.
Submarine. How about by foot, though? The Ben Franklin Bridge will be closed.
The Ben Franklin Bridge will be closed but open to foot traffic. We don't know how much foot traffic, how wide they're going to open the bridge, but you will be able to walk across it. So a lot of the press conference today was about how you could get to the bridge and then be able to walk over it.
Bicycles?
Bicycles will be allowed, but probably you'll have to walk them across the bridge, and that might just be because there are going to be so many people you won't be able to ride them across.
For those who are going to try to get in by car, they'll have to do an end around either north or south of the Ben Franklin.
Right. Well, you will be able to park in South Jersey, but officials say if you're trying to park in Camden, it's a fat chance. There are going to be no parking spots for cars on the waterfront, just buses. So Transportation Commissioner Jamie Foxx basically said today, be prepared to walk if you plan to drive near the bridge.
There are going to be obstacles to people getting to this event. There are not enough parking spaces. There are not enough parking spaces for buses nor cars. And so people are going to have to plan on walking a fairly decent distance. If you are not capable, health-wise, of making that long trek, you may want to evaluate whether you're coming or not.
When does the bridge close? Friday? And when is it reopening?
The bridge closes Friday at 10 and reopens Monday around noon.
And then everything will be back to normal?
We hope so.
Now let's turn to Ground Zero, the Philadelphia side. And for that, here's WHYY's Tom McDonald. Tom?
Well, Dave, last week we heard about the Green Line, which is going to be about a three-mile perimeter from Ground Zero, the art museum. Now we have some new lines added to our map. We have a black line, which is an interior perimeter. We don't know exactly how wide that is. We have a map of it. We haven't had a chance to calculate it yet. And then there's the red line where the F word comes out, fence. There is going to be a fence around Independence Hall and also from about City Hall out to the art museum. And that whole area will be cordoned off, and you'll have to use a metal detector to get in. Mayor Michael Nutter says it's important that everyone follows the rules so that we can have a good day.
I want to, again, ask people to really exercise a lot of caution. If you find yourself in a situation where you're driving down the street and there are 5,000 folks in front of you, I mean, at some point, you got to make a decision as to what you're going to do. Streets open, technically, but maybe impassable.
The mayor's referring to the areas inside the green traffic box where they will have people walking around, and they will be some interplay with cars, and everything starts shutting down Thursday night into Friday morning, and from there it just goes downhill until sometime on Monday.
Did we learn anything more about the specific access roads for, say, medical or business interests?
There will be specific access roads around the perimeter. They're marked in yellow on our map. I know I can't hold it up to the microphone and show you, but they're mostly the main roads, and they're roads that are going to be used if someone winds up having a problem and they have to be taken to a hospital, things along that line. At this point, we understand that you cannot drive a normal vehicle on those roads, but there will be ingress and egress. The best thing that I can tell you from sitting through a number of these briefings, don't think about driving. Bicycles, on foot, and make sure that you've got your fitness up because it's going to be a very long walk.
And then once you get there, how about mundane things like bathroom opportunities, or can you bring a backpack with water and hoagies?
They are going to put out a list of items that are allowed. Food and water, hydration are going to be allowed, but they are all going to have to go through magnetometer screening. So you're going to have to think about when you're going to want to go and how long you're going to have to be. I know, Dave, you and I have been to presidential events. When you're in line for those magnetometers, it's going to take a long time, and you're talking a million people that are all going to have to be screened, maybe more. There is also going to be a secondary location in Independence Hall where they're going to set up some jumbotrons for pilgrims who just can't make it all the way to the parkway.
And with that, can we anticipate weekly meetings from Mayor Nutter? This seems to be a trend.
Yeah, the mayor has said that he will continue to brief us. And, you know, in between, everybody gets their speculation in. And hopefully when each meeting comes, we get a little more clarity.
Thanks, Tom.
You're welcome, Dave.
WHYY's Tom McDonald. Police who patrol Camden, New Jersey are looking to new training and a mentoring program to relearn how they interact with residents. And it starts with the very first words out of an officer's mouth, as WHYY's Aaron Moselle explains.
But you want to be able to say every time you do it, I did all four. I did my greeting, who am I, what my affiliation is, why I'm here, and my relevant question.
On a muggy afternoon, 20 officers with the Camden County Police Department are sitting in a spare recreation room in Spring Lake, New Jersey, an hour and a half drive and a world away from the rough streets they patrol. It's day one of a three-day training session guided by a simple yet complicated principle. Respecting life saves lives, residents and cops.
Good afternoon, sir. Sergeant Rogers, Camden County Police Department. The reason why I'm here, we had a report that there was a loud noise coming from the house. Is everybody all right here?
Everybody's good.
Hola. Hi, how you doing? My name is Sergeant Watkins, Camden County Police Department. We received a 911 call. It was a hangout for...
It all starts by practicing the so-called universal greeting, a semi-scripted way for officers to introduce themselves and hopefully keep things calm when responding to a call. Jack Hoban is a speaker with Resolution Group International, the company teaching these officers how to become what he calls ethical protectors. He defines that as someone who puts life, all life, above everything else, even the life of a suspected criminal. For Lieutenant Linda Alisea, that means unlearning habits formed over years.
Who is it? Camden County Police Department?
No,
she's not opening the door yet.
What about a greeting?
I can't smell the
what
door
about
yet.
Good evening.
She didn't open the door yet.
You want to get her
She's yelling room. Through the people.
She can still hear you, though, right?
You wanted to get I'll her see this. Okay. Knock, knock.
Who is it?
I can't say good, all right.
It's hard, isn't it?
Yeah.
Hello?
I'm not usually nice like that. Okay, I'm sorry.
Hoban says the point of the greeting is to make it second nature to inject kindness and respect into every encounter. The thought is an angry or aggressive officer raises stress levels, and with it, the chance for a situation to escalate, turn violent, and maybe even become national news. But Hoban says the greeting is also strategic. For example, he says things could easily become dangerous if an officer doesn't tell drivers why they've been pulled over. Say an officer stops a guy for having a broken taillight, but unknown to the officer, the guy has also just robbed a bank.
If you go up to say driver's license and registration, what does this guy think you stopped him for? The bank robbery, right? You don't even know about the bank robbery, but he thinks you stopped him about the bank robbery. Now he's pulling out his gun because he don't want to go back to jail. Pop, pop.
Hoban says it might go better with the officer talking up front about the taillight. His program is also about giving officers the tools they need to stay emotionally stable. He says it's easier for healthier officers to develop real relationships with the people they serve. But it's harder than it sounds. Sergeant Raphael Thornton grew up in Camden and has been a cop here for nearly two decades. He says the work is mentally taxing and can change you for the worse.
You've seen countless homicides. You've seen little kids' bodies mangled. In order to deal with all of that loss of life, you start to not look at people as actually being human. They start to become body counts. You don't look at them as like you would look at your brother or your sister, because that would emotionally eat away at you. But you start to lose pieces of yourself.
And that, he says, is when police officers are more likely to step over the line.
We're in a bad place right now for police officers in our country. And what's at stake is the trust, the respect, and the basic overview of how our citizens view police officers. And just by learning to greet someone kind of like takes a step in tearing down that wall of us against them.
In the coming weeks, the Camden officers trained in Spring Lake will pass along what they've learned to the rest of the force through an internal mentoring program. Chief Scott Thompson says success here will be more subjective than statistical.
We're not measuring the amount of arrests you make or tickets you write. We really don't care about that. Our objective is to have children playing in the street, people being able to enjoy their front steps. The only way that's going to happen is for you to go into that neighborhood and for them to know you and to build that trust.
It'll be roughly a year before every officer on the force is trained to be an ethical protector. I'm Aaron Mozell, WHYY News.
Checking in on this evening's headlines, Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf and a key Republican budget negotiator say they're still grappling with unresolved issues. Democrat Wolf and House Majority Leader Dave Reed emerged from a session that lasted well over an hour today to say they worked on two major issues: how much to spend on education and proposals to cut public sector pensions. Pennsylvania is midway through the second month of the fiscal year without a budget in place after Wolf vetoed a Republican-penned spending plan that passed with no Democratic votes. Wolf says he and legislative leaders plan to hash it out again next Tuesday. Tolls are going up on the Tacony-Palmyra and Burlington-Bristol bridges for the first time in 15 years. The Burlington County Bridge Commission approved the increase last night, saying the money is needed to pay for $110 million in capital improvements. The increase means for tolls for cars, motorcycles, and light trucks will double from $2 to $4 for cash customers, from $2 to $3 for E-ZPass motorists. The higher tolls are expected to take effect September 15th. Sunshine, 82 degrees on Independence Mall. It's 6:16. You're listening to Newsworks Tonight on WHYY. Clear skies, the call this evening. Low overnight, 65 degrees. Sunny tomorrow. Friday's high in the mid-80s. Saturday, sunny, high around 90 degrees. And ahead to Sunday, plenty of sunshine, high around 92. Still ahead, some kids with autism are spending the summer watching anime.
While they were sitting, rocking back and forth, playing a lot with their fingers or their hands. So they're just, you would see some of the hallmarks of the spectrum.
Hear how the cartoons are helping some children communicate when Newsworks Tonight continues on WHYY.
Do you wish to lose weight? Do you have family members or friends who would also like to lose weight and develop healthier eating and exercise habits? Drexel University is offering a 4-session workshop as part of a research study. Participants will learn healthy weight management skills. For more information, 215-553-7110 or by email at healthyhabits@drexel.edu. Again, that's 215-553-7110. Drexel University supports WHYY.
Next time on The Pulse...
I was very out of breath. I was coughing.
Michael Trost went to the emergency room because he thought he had pneumonia. Instead, he needed major surgery.
Who would have thought?
Honestly, I was overwhelmed.
He and his wife Susan have health insurance, so they didn't exactly expect to get a bill for $32,000.
Yeah, the heart surgeon.
Insurance, out-of-network docs, and getting stuck with the balance. On The Pulse, tomorrow morning at 9 on WHYY.
Financial news changes by the very minute. Domestic and global markets are crazy.
China's not about to move away from buying U.S. treasuries.
The European Central Bank wading into the Spanish and Italian government bond market today.
The whole debt ceiling debate made us look dysfunctional. We all know that.
That's okay, though, because we're here. Marketplace. It's the business show for the rest of us. It's from APM, American Public Media.
Tonight at 6:30 on WHYY.
Welcome back to Newsworks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. 1 week out from the first Republican presidential debate of the 2016 cycle, there is one clear winner. Fox, 24 million viewers made the spectacle cable's most watched non-sports telecast on record. Now, as for the candidates, Real Clear Politics aggregate polling through Monday shows New Jersey Governor Chris Christie stuck in ninth place among the 17 candidates, with Carly Fiorina and John Kasich closing in. Christie hopes a pledge of allegiance will help propel him to the top. Let's learn more with Bergen Record columnist Charlie Style. Charlie, thanks for joining us once again.
How are you?
Christie is specifically pledging allegiance to Grover Norquist. Explain this change of heart.
Well, I think Grover Norquist is, as you know, he's president of the Americans for Tax Reform. He's a anti-tax, I guess you could call, activist. Some see him as a one-dimensional zealot, but he pops up during campaign cycles pressing candidates to sign the bottom line, vowing to oppose or veto any tax hikes that come across their desk once they're elected. So Christie has disdained this pledge, or these pledges in general, as recently as 2012 when he was ramping up for a re-election for governor. He said, "I don't need these. My record speaks for itself. The only pledge I've made is to the voters of New Jersey. I'm going to stick to that." It was a real back of the hand to Grover Norquist's style pledges. But on Wednesday, he completely reversed himself and signed the pledge. And then within, I would say, almost an hour after that was released, he's on the radio attacking Jeb Bush for not signing the pledge. It was one of the more colorful turnabouts in the Christie catalog of turnabouts in this race.
How does he substantiate this turnabout?
I think the argument he's making, ironically, is the one he made on the Laura Ingraham radio show yesterday, that if you're proud of your record and this is your belief system that I don't support any new tax increases and my record shows it, then what are you afraid of, Jeb? So he hasn't really explained the steps leading up to this reversal, but it does come at a time when he's looking, grasping for anything to get an edge, get some attention, get some traction.
Do you think it really matters to voters whether Christie signs onto this pledge and or whether he's obeyed it during his time as governor?
To me, this is like one of these small bore, ephemeral moments in a campaign. You see in a kind of in New Jersey, the county freeholder race or a legislative race, not a presidential one so much. In the long term, I don't think it's going to have that much of an impact.
Many think that his time has come and gone, that 2012 was the time for him to enter the race, and so much has happened in the interim. Is there speculation that what this is really about is angling for a subsequent cabinet position in a Republican administration in 2016?
You know, that's always a theory. There's the other theory that he's just broadening his exposure as much as he can so he can end up as a talking head on a cable channel like Fox or something. I mean, you sit around a room with a bunch of reporters and politicos and you'll come up with any kind of theory. To be fair, I mean, this is way early in the contest. A lot of variables could happen. A lot of things could happen. And this field could change very quickly. If I'm Chris Christie, why not hang around, see what happens? I was once the front runner. I am colorful. I do connect with people in town hall settings. In his view, I got nothing to lose other than going back to Jersey and facing a mountain of crises.
Charlie, I think you hit on it earlier. The nation definitely needs more talking heads. Thanks for joining us on Newsworks tonight.
My pleasure.
Bergen Record columnist Charlie Style. A Philadelphia summer camp lets kids watch cartoons all day. It's an anime camp. It's focused on the Japanese animation style and the culture behind it. From WHYY's Arts and Culture Desk, Peter Crimmins reports that the camp uses anime to engage children on the autism spectrum.
What is this?
At an Elkins Park theater company called White Pines Productions, five kids spend the day in a dimly lit room watching anime, drawing anime and dressing as anime characters. One of them is Gabe Robinson. He's 11.
I like Spirited Away, Totoro, and I also like Mechamagica, Dragon Ball Z Kai, Case Closed, also known as Detective Conan, Midnight Conan, and many more.
Gabe is on the autism spectrum. He's bright, talkative, smart, engages quickly. He shook my hand as soon as I entered the room. But he has a hard time reading other people, picking up on social cues. His parents, Chris and Sandra Robinson, say anime helps.
I mean, autism in the spectrum is a complex thing, but, you know, communication and working collaboratively, you know, seeing the world in a more holistic way.
And how you process the world in terms of social interaction. I think the art really does help him process, you know, socially.
This summer camp was created on the notion that kids with autism are prone to like anime, maybe best known from TV series like Speed Racer and Gigantor, more recently as Pokemon. That notion is not grounded scientifically, but the director, Heidi Morine, has 10 years of psychiatric social work under her belt and a teenage son with Asperger's syndrome.
It just seems to be a large number of kids, young adults that are drawn to anime have Asperger's or are on the spectrum, and that's very much anecdotal, pure observation on my part and others, on the part of others.
What? They're all for me? Thanks, but I don't need any more.
One of anime's more sophisticated and adult products was the film Spirited Away. That was a story of a girl lost in an abandoned amusement park who has to overcome demons and ghosts to rescue her family. It won an Oscar when it was released in the U.S. In Japan, it outgrossed Titanic. Why people on the autism spectrum should be particularly attracted to anime is anyone's guess. There have been no formal studies. Some theorize that the plots tend to be very meaty and complex, while the emotions are simplified. The characters have big eyes, which plainly register happy or sad, fear or friendly. There's no room for irony in anime. One parent at the camp, Ellen Charup, says it's easy for her 12-year-old daughter to follow the emotion of the story.
It comes along with a very well-articulated set of rules and personalities for each of the characters. They're not too shallow, and they're not easy to grasp, but they are also very inflexible characters. And so you know what each character is gonna do. And that's so comforting for a kid who doesn't necessarily read social signs or cues.
Heidi Morine, the director of the camp, says if you go to an anime convention, there seems to be an unusually high concentration of young people on the spectrum.
I didn't realize what a phenomenon it was until I went to Zenkai Con. 4,000 to 5,000 kids show up on average.
Zenkai Con is an anime convention held every spring at the Lancaster County Convention Center.
There were some people that would sit in the audience and be listening very attentively, but while they were sitting, be rocking back and forth or playing a lot with their fingers or their hands or with some object or something. So they're just, you would see some of the hallmarks of the spectrum.
She's not the only one to notice this. Benita Jo Morrison is part of the operations team at Zenkai Con. She works on the floor of the convention, directly with its participants. And she says the staff strives to keep it a calm place. They're learning how to know what to expect and how to react when kids with autism have trouble.
You know, it's not rocket science. It's really just common sense. You just have to show a little more patience than you would with the average person. Plus, you have to have an ability to recognize who's actually special needs and who's just being a jerk.
I'm Peter Crimmins, WHYY News.
That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Benyakov and Kimberly Haas. Listen again to a story or catch up on a missed show via podcast or online at newsworks.org. Tomorrow evening, Gallup Poll Editor-in-Chief Frank Newport takes the weekly pulse of the American public. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.
Eastern University supports WHYY. The College of Business and Leadership programs educate and empower students to lead in the global marketplace, with various MBA programs including management and health administration, and both a master's and PhD in organization leadership. Eastern believes the world responds to those who believe and do. Their programs are designed to empower students to develop skills that impact the world around them. Eastern.edu/empower. Eastern University. Don't just be, do, and wake up the world.